You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I'm with Ace Chapman. Ace, how you doing?
I am excellent, Ken. Great to talk about some deals today.
Man, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So Ace actually is, he's been a real estate investor in the past, but I think this is going to be a really interesting episode because he doesn't really flip houses anymore. He actually flips businesses, which is something, even as a kid, I had small businesses. I've had internet businesses in the past. And so for me, this is going to be a very interesting interview to talk about how he made that progression from flipping houses to flipping businesses. The name of his business is Ace Chapman Business Acquisition Consultants. He actually recently wrote a book called The Ace Formula, which sort of opens people's minds to flipping businesses and what that looks like. But before we get into that, Ace, maybe take us back. Talk to us about how you got started as an entrepreneur and then eventually became somebody that buys and sells businesses.
Well, I'll go back and tell you a quick story about how I really got started. My very first business was when I was a kid. My mom gave me 20 bucks, was like, bought a infinite amount of candy in my mind. And it was for me to go and pay for my pictures at school. And so, you know, I'm like, man, $20 for these pictures? This is crazy. So we get the pictures back and we go to church and she's kind of cutting them out and handing them to people. And I run up to her, I'm like, are you giving the pictures away or are you selling them? She's like, nobody was going to buy the pictures. So I'm giving them away. And I just pitch a fit until she would let me take the pictures myself and start to sell them. So my very first business was me selling pictures of myself for 50 cents a piece as a six-year-old kid.
That's hilarious.
Unfortunately, I had to give that up. I'm not as cute as I was back then, so I've had to go on to some other things. But I got started in this space when I was 19. I was still a business nerd and was a part of a stock market simulator in college. And it was one of those things where you basically get some fake money. You go out and you put it in the stock market and try to make more money. And it was for fun. And so the frustrating thing was that the site was always crashing. You could never get any support from the owners. And it's like, man, like, you know, this is a really cool thing. But obviously, they're having some issues. So when the summer came, I reached out to them to see about becoming an intern with them. And didn't hear anything back. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty typical. And then finally, they wrote back and said, hey, we actually don't want this thing. We want to sell it. Would you be interested in buying it? Because we're moving on to another project. And, you know, being young and probably a little dumb, I was like, why not me? I could buy this thing. And so that was my very first deal. I ended up buying that. It was a $70,000 business, which sounded like an infinite amount of money for a broke college kid that had $3,000 saved up from working the summer before. But I went back to them, got them to do some seller financing on about 50% of it. And they sold it at a 1x earnings. So today, if somebody, I wouldn't even have the guts to go back to somebody that gave me such a great deal and say, oh, in addition to this amazing price that you just gave me, I'm also going to need you to finance half of it.
Right.
So sometimes being naive and not having a lot of knowledge can help you. I mean, and I see that today, even in deals where we go, I'm like, there's no way they're going to accept this. And then it's like, oh, they did. That's amazing. So I got them to finance part of it. I got a buddy of mine to put in about $15,000 to buy some equity and sold him on the concept that, hey, we can take this thing and grow it. And then kept this a secret from my parents until it was all paid off. But I secretly got some credit cards and got some cash for the rest of it, like totally fearful that my parents are going to get one of the bills in the mail or something, and my cover would be blown. But that was my very first deal, and I got it closed. Ended up turning into an amazing business. We grew it. And one of the things that changed the trajectory of my career is, you know, that was a life-changing business where we had some seven-figure offer deals on the table. And then the 2001 hit, we had the explosion of all the value on the internet. Everybody felt like the internet was done and all this stuff, and literally end up selling it for a tenth of what we had offers for. And that probably made me really trigger happy. And you know, because I felt like, hey, this is going to be a huge business. I'm going to run this forever and that kind of thing. And then things changed and those offers were gone. And I think in my future businesses, I was always building to sell. And in the next couple of businesses, it would just turn out that somebody would come to me and end up saying, hey, would you be interested in selling? And I'm like, yeah, what do you want to pay? So after that first business, everything had a price on it, and I was ready to sell and was building to sell.
Interesting. And so then at some point in time, you I guess you moved past the stock simulator and actually bought into a HomeVestors franchise?
Yeah, so HomeVestors was the fourth business I bought.
Okay.
And this was around 2004, 2005. It was really one of those things where I was excited to get into real estate. You know, I'd done a few businesses, had done the offline thing, had done the online thing. And for me, you know, I was like everybody else. Yeah, there's 20 different TV shows about flipping houses, flip that house, flip this house, you know. So I was excited to get into real estate. So we bought this business, grew that to doing over 150 houses in a couple of years that we owned it. And that was the first time that I realized, okay, well, maybe me buying and selling these businesses could be systemized the way that, you know, they did a great job of systemizing the buying and selling of real estate. And so that was a huge transition business. And again, you know, we had somebody who came to us and wanted to buy that business. So we sold out. I held a little bit of equity in the HomeVestor business. And after that, I decided, you know, instead of me going out, before I would buy a business and really try to figure out, okay, how can I grow this business and you know, turn it into this huge monster, maybe take it public one day and that kind of thing. After that, it really became, okay, my product and my business can be businesses. Mm-hmm. And so I started to work and systemize this process and did that for about 4 years, just buying and selling deals. And then 6 years ago, we started working with clients, and I hit a point where there was only so many deals that I could do personally, and realized, okay, if I can train somebody else on how to do this, that'll give me the opportunity to invest in their deals. Mm-hmm. And it was still amazing to me. I think when I had that realization, I kept thinking, you know, you can buy a business for a 2x. Everybody's so excited about getting a 10%, 15% return. And this is a space where you can get 50% return pretty normally. And I kept thinking, I gotta keep this quiet because everybody's gonna find out about it. And you know, it's really interesting. Nobody, millions of businesses out there, nobody really talks about how to go out and buy them and do those deals. And so we started to do that 6 years ago, and that's led to a lot of amazing opportunities. Literally, now we have clients from Israel to Cape Town in South Africa to South Korea in Asia. So, you know, spanning the globe and of course all over the US. And so that's been a really exciting journey.
So essentially you kind of got the idea of, okay, this HomeVestors franchise, they've systemized, you know, bringing me motivated sellers. I've learned how to screen these deals. And then I cherry picked the deals I want to do. And so you basically moved on to, okay, let's apply these same principles to buying businesses. You know, let's look at X number of potential businesses, filter through the ones that don't make sense, and then make, you know, make low offers or make offers that make sense, you know, on a handful of these. And then in most cases, you're buying them with the intention of selling them. Is that right?
Exactly. And the real value, you know, even when you look at a franchise or something like that, the value isn't so much that original guy who had some foundation of a system. It's really all of the people that make tweaks and start to learn things and figure out other things. And so, you know, just as a simple example, when I first started 6 years ago, I was excited. I had 8 different forms of deal flow, the places we could go to create deals and find deals and all of that. And, you know, I'm like, man, this is pretty awesome. I figured this out. And now, because of this kind of crowdsourced deal making process that we take things through, we've got 36 different ways that we create deal flow.
Wow.
So it's the crowd going out and trying things and perfecting things. And, you know, even more importantly, when it comes to due diligence, you know, the people figuring out, hey, in this industry, we need to watch out for this. Or with those brokers, we need to watch out for how they calculate this. And all of that knowledge coming together, that's really created an amazing system.
That's such an interesting space. I mean, I'm sure that other people are doing this. Do you feel like there's much competition? Are there other groups like yours that are in the business of buying and selling small businesses?
Probably one of the most amazing things, you know, I was not used to, even when I bought the Homevestor business, was the idea that I was going to negotiate with somebody and then somebody else was going to come back and pay a better price or give a better deal. I'm like, what? Like, why is this happening? So, or in our space, I mean, literally, I've had people that come to me and they want to sell their business. I had one client, one seller who invited us to his house, me and a partner that was going to do the deal. And we give him the offer and, you know, you just sit there and he's kind of turning red. And I'm like, man, this guy's literally turning red at the table. And he just burst into a list of profanities and kicks us out of his house and blah, 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 blah. And my partner on that deal in the car is like, well, there's no way that we're getting that business. I'm like, let's give him time. I think there's a possibility. He's like, did you hear him? And sure enough, maybe a month later, the wife comes back and she's like, hey, I want to apologize for my husband. Can we work out a deal? And, you know, at that point, we pushed it a little bit lower. But it's just a different world from real estate. I mean, you know, the typical average deal is on the market at 2x earnings. And so you're talking about a 50% return. And a lot of deals that we do, especially on the offline deals, we're buying at lower than a 1 multiple.
Wow. So I know most people are thinking, okay, what types of businesses are you buying? I mean, I'm sure it's a range of businesses, but give us just an idea. What's a typical business that you're buying and selling?
Yeah. So, you know, in the last few months, let's give some examples just in recent deals. Okay. Everything from online SaaS business to a business in the dental product space. It sells a product in the dental space and does business with retailers and dentists and all of that to spa. You know, we talked a little bit about that before the call. And so at any given day, you know, I can look at my calendar and see calls coming up and it could just be everything from an engineering firm to a Angus farm.
Wow. So because there's not a lot of uniformity, see, that's the one thing in real estate. I mean, there's not that much variety compared to businesses. It's probably tough to standardize how you do due diligence on something.
Yeah, a lot of the art to this, and that's why I say this isn't something that you're going to watch some videos and then want to go out and do.
Yeah.
You know, I had somebody, fortunately, that I was introduced to who flipped hospitals, and he kind of served as my mentor and somebody I could bounce things off of and that kind of thing. It's a lot more of an art than a science. So when you've got a uniformity to a process, you can say, okay, it's this step, that step, that step, that step. In this world, and why it's a more long-term process with the people who apprentice in our program is, you know, there are a lot of experiences. Now, you can multiply those experiences by the fact that we have this huge network. So we love doing deals where we can go to somebody in a network who has expertise and say, hey, you know, I'm going to go through the standard process, but you tell me any additional things that I should be looking out for. Let's talk about how other folks have structured deals in this space. And so that's been a gradual thing where, you know, at 6 years ago, we were, because I had done fitness gym deal or a spa deal or a tennis line or restaurant and franchises, retail store. So I had done deals in those different spaces. So a lot of where I tried to take my clients was like, okay, you know, we know how to do deals in these spaces. Over time, they've brought their own expertise. And so now we can go back and say, oh, you're doing an Angus farm? Well, we did this other farm deal, and this is how we structured it, and this is some of the things that we want to watch out for. Oh, you're doing a pit, you know, we recently had this deal in the pet sitting space. Literally, this is a great example. And so we were looking at a deal in the pet sitting space in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And client brought it to us. We're going through the due diligence. And this is a case where we didn't have a lot of experience in it. And we're going through. And so we like to be really strict on how we do our due diligence. So we're waiting on some proof of things and that kind of thing. My clients, this deal was at like a 1.4 times earnings. They were itching to close. I'm telling them we're not closing until we get all of the information. And they were not happy with me. So sometimes I have to be not only the bad guy to the seller, but the bad guy to the buyer.
That's right.
And it's like, nope, we're not going to close until we get this information. And sure enough, we get it and find out that the state of Oregon had made some regulatory changes and started regulating the pet sitting network. Almost kind of like what Uber's going through, where they're saying, oh, well, these people are really employees and da 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 da. And so what this thing was basically an Airbnb for pets.
Yep.
So we walked away from that deal. We've got that in our database and we know to watch out for that. Fast forward a few months later, have another pet sitting network deal come up in LA. And again, amazing deal. Everything looks amazing. And we're going through the process and we got that note. Okay, let's check the legislation. And we check it and everything looks good. Nothing's there. So we're going a little bit through the process. And, you know, when we have things like that to come up, we go through it again in a little more depth. So the deal looked good. So we're going through like a true due diligence. And so we want to go back and check the docket on any regulation in space. And sure enough, we checked the docket and nothing had come up and nothing to be voted on, but it was coming down the docket. This guy was trying to sell the business before they voted it in to have those regulatory changes. And those are things, I mean, there's just no due diligence process that's going to say, oh, when it comes to pet sitting networks, make sure you check the legislative risk. You know, that's not something that is like, that's not going to be in a scientific process, step by step by step on a particular deal. So when I try to tell people like, well, you know, it's different than real estate. And, you know, you want to have somebody who's walking alongside you who has some experience in some different things. And that's one of the reasons why.
Well, and I imagine in a lot of cases, you've got owners of businesses selling maybe because they see something like that on the horizon that they don't necessarily disclose. Exactly. I mean, I'm assuming you probably run into that all the time. They're not telling you the full story. And so you got to put your private eye hat on and try to figure out, okay, why are you really selling?
Yeah, exactly. And that's your job as a deal maker. So, you know, this space, and it is totally different than being an entrepreneur. A lot of people say, oh man, like you've owned all these businesses. You're a great entrepreneur. I tried to start a business one time. I'm a terrible entrepreneur. I don't know how people do it. I don't know why anybody would go through the torture of starting a business from scratch with all of the statistics that are against you and all mm-hmm. that. I'm not a good entrepreneur, but I am a good deal maker. And so the skill sets are totally different. You're not worried about being a social media expert, learning the latest, you know, PPC tactics and retargeting and all of that. The goal as a deal maker is you have four things that you're focused on: creating deal flow, being able to do due diligence and be aware of the things that we just talked about, coming up with valuations the right way, and then putting together deal structures that not only give you a great ROI, but protect you from the downside.
Right, right. When that actually brings up another question. I mean, assuming you've done a ton of deals over the last so many years, have you ever got into a deal and then, you know, discovered something you didn't realize, and then you're stuck with a business that's not performing as well as you expected?
I think there are always things that you get in and you start to learn. And so you want to structure the deal so that when that does come up, you get compensated for it. Okay. I don't mind taking risks. Mm-hmm. I just want to get paid when I do take the risk, and I want to get compensated. So, you know, the risk, the more unknowns that are in a deal, the lower that price is going to be.
I got you.
And you know, you can also create things like milestones. So if mm-hmm. I get into a deal, maybe I am in a space that I'm unfamiliar with. So even when we were doing that pet sitting deal, and that was our first one in Oregon, mm-hmm. We're going into that deal. It's like, hey, we got to get some major discounts. We got to get some major seller concessions. We got to structure this deal where they've got some of the risk. And if it doesn't hit this metric, then, you know, they don't get as much money as they would if it did. And so there were some things where even if we closed that deal, either one of those deals, we were protected on the downside. But what we gotcha. Really want to do is protect ourselves on the downside, but still go into a deal that has the potential to explode and to grow. And so, you know, one of the things that I call is just low hanging fruit. We still want to go into that deal that is has the potential to really explode. And the neat thing is, just like real estate, you know, you want to go and buy that house that, you know, you still want an amazing deal on it, but you don't want to get the house that's at the top of the market in that neighborhood and has no room to get some comps mm-hmm. that are a little bit higher.
That's
well,
right.
the neat thing in this world is there isn't a limit, you know, like literally a $100,000 business can turn into a $1 million business. And so we want to try to get the business that has that explosive opportunity. And the funny thing in this world is there a lot of people are like, man, you have those sellers that are hiding something, mm-hmm. but you also have the sellers that literally are exhausted. And, you know, we had a deal like this just a couple weeks ago that we closed, where, you know, they had built an amazing business, the husband and wife team, literally pouring 16-hour days into business every day, not taking a day off, hadn't taken a vacation in 2 years. And then the last 6 months of the business, it really hit its stride. They got employees, they started to get things in place, and it was like that last little bit of the marathon, and mm-hmm. they just hit a brick wall. Like, literally, we cannot go in that business another day.
Wow.
And so, you know, we're able to go into those deals where, man, the momentum is just amazing. And, you know, somebody's just given all they can. And like I said, being an entrepreneur is just a tough thing. I mean, you think about from the very beginning, just getting the lease, and you sign the lease, you make the deposit, you start making payments, you got to get the build out and pull those contractors in and organize that. You got to get all the stuff that you need in the place and the equipment, and you're negotiating that. You get to the point where you need employees, you got to go and search for the employees, and then you got to train them. And, you know, all this before you make dollar one. Before you open the doors, then you got to figure out some marketing and get some folks to come in, and you know, eventually you open the business and you're still losing money trying to just get to break even, and It's like, you know, just on and on and on. And so that it, there's a specific reason why the we see the high failure rate. One is that, but the other is you're required to be an expert at everything, and just that's unrealistic. Nobody is an expert at everything. You know, there's nobody who's going to be good at the marketing, good at creating financial systems, good at coming up with the operating systems, great at hiring, great at training, great at coming up with the inventory. You know, just like there's no way that you're going to be good at that, and so you end up testing a lot of things, and you know, it's a very tough road.
So that's another, that leads me to the next question. I mean, when you're buying a business, I'm assuming it's important that you're buying a business where somebody stays involved in the business that is the expert in most areas, where you're not having to come in and learn all that.
Yes. That's one of the things that is really valuable about this space. It's not like a real estate deal where in a lot of times you can not even ever meet the seller. You come in, you sign papers, maybe they sign at another time and you never see them. So one of the things in this space is, you know, you want the seller to be a part of it, and you want them to have a financial incentive to make sure that you're successful. There may be some things that you do want to change in the business, but at the foundation, they've built those core essential aspects of the business, and they're a great resource. You know, it's almost like buying a franchise without paying the franchise fee because they've figured it out. They've done all that hard work that we just went through that was just the beginning. There's more work that comes after that. But all of those headaches in those first 3, 4, 5 years of making that business work, they've done it. And so they become a really valuable resource. So we really want them tied into the business contractually and financially so that they have an incentive to work alongside us and make sure that, you know, we're at least getting their guidance and then deciding if we want to take their advice or not. The other thing is you want a business that has trained people in it. I mean, even when we're buying an internet business, we like for it to come with people that have been working in the business for a while, that get the basics of how things need to work, what needs to be done, and we can come in and maybe make some tweaks and improve it. But between those two folks, you really walk into a situation where you from day one, you're able to work a lot more on the business than in the business. And there are a lot of people that would be amazing business owners that get discouraged because they tried to be an entrepreneur, and it's two different things. So a lot of people give up on ever owning a business because they tried to start one from scratch and go through what I call the entrepreneurial gauntlet, where the odds were just highly, highly against them. And they give up on that dream of being a business owner when, you know, there is another course of action that lends to a lot higher success statistics and a lot easier time getting there.
Let's talk a little bit about how your buyers and how you guys finance these deals. So let's say you go out there and you find a great business that's $500,000, and the person that you've partnered with doesn't have $500,000 to buy. I'm sure there's a lot of different ways to structure financing, but what's typical in this space?
So if you take any particular industry, most of the time they're going to be typical things in that industry. So let's take a we just did a deal on tanning salon. So let's take a tanning salon. With the tanning salon, you know, at the foundation, you're going to want 50% seller financing. So you're buying a deal, and this is where these things start to get really beautiful. So, you know, as long as you have a motivated seller, you're not going to be paying more than 2x earnings. So a business making $125,000 is going to sell for $250,000. You want that seller to take back 50%. One of the reasons that they have to do that is, like we said, nobody does this stuff, so there's no competition. But it's really a standard that says, hey, I believe in this business. I believe you're going to be able to run it, so I'll finance half of it. The other thing, though, is you could go out and get SBA financing. We don't do a ton of that, But there, depending on how long the business has been around, you could pull that off and increase the amount of that initial foundation financing up to 75%. The seller would finance 15%. But going with the seller financing, you've got that 50% that you start with.
Yep.
On the deal we recently did, there was a lot of equipment, obviously. And some of it was already had a lease on it. So we go back to that guy, we say, you know, don't pay off this lease. We want to see if we can take over the lease. And we go and that gives you another $40,000 that you can basically don't have to pay of the 25. So instead of saying, I'm going to go out and pay you $45,000 and you're just going to take it over to these people and pay that them $40,000. I'm going to take over that payment.
I got you. Yep.
And then some of the rest of it. So one of the things that we do that's pretty neat is we put a down payment, and then a lot of times we'll split the down payment based on certain milestones. So we're able to get into the business and then figure out what else is going on and that kind of thing. And in that split, you can get into the business and do some promotions and make that money back in order to make the rest of that down payment, you know, in 90 days or 6 months or whatever. So you can end up splitting that. But yeah, so with every industry, it's going to be a little bit different, and you take deals a little bit differently. You know, that's a very simple deal. We've had other deals where, you know, we're you know, we had one in Virginia where literally there was factoring, there was equipment leasing, there was an asset-based loan, obviously some seller financing, and a real estate loan. And so you can get into some complex things, but it can be really, really simple. You just get into a really amazing deal. In that case, you know, you got a six-figure business that's going to be able to kick off some strong cash and be very easy to run. A lot of times, the reason we love businesses like that, like fitness gyms, is that you've got members that every month, you know, it's like rent. Mm-hmm. But instead of having the small margins, you've got real margins where, you know, you're from a single business, you're taking home enough to pay a salary. Mm-hmm. And so you've got that consistency there.
I mean, I guess in most cases, your goal is to try to get into the deal with as little of your own money as possible. I mean, that's probably a big part of your objective.
Absolutely. Our real goal is having the best ROI.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's more about getting somebody who wants to really sell their business and getting a really great deal than it is about no money. So we've done a ton of deals, you know, and people can go search our YouTube and be able to see some of the case studies of folks that we've gotten, you know, no money down deals and cash back deals and all of that. I think it is still, though, is a little bit different than when you are dealing with a let's say real estate where you need a lot of deals. And so not putting money down on a deal is a lot more crucial because you need so many deals and you got to make your money go so far. With these deals, it's not as necessary because, you know, you get a couple or two or three businesses and they're kicking off that much cash flow. It's not as important. So, you know, people will take a portion of their ROA or some money from 401k and do that. But so we have made a big name from doing the no money down deals. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of those. And it's more just fun. You know, it's neat to be able to close a deal and say, man, I didn't bring any money to the table. We had a recent one that we negotiated and, you know, we negotiated with the dad. And, you know, he's getting ready to retire and he's, you know, brings his son on the phone. He's like, I'm looking at this statement and you guys aren't bringing any cash to close. And we're like, yeah, that's right. And he's like, well, that doesn't seem fair. And we're like, well, your dad is getting all the cash that he wanted. So, what do you mean not fair? He's like, that's just not fair. That's not right that you guys can buy this business without putting money up. And we literally, I guess he talked to his dad, and we literally lost the deal where it was completely negotiated. We were ready to close. The seller was getting everything that he asked for, but he just didn't think that it was fair that we were getting the business with none of our own cash.
That's crazy. I mean, yeah, I guess it's got to like appear equitable to everybody, regardless how it's structured.
It's funny.
Now,
It's
do
funny.
you go like, what's a closing look like? I mean, obviously, real estate closing, you're in front of an attorney or a title company, and there's a HUD settlement statement. What does it look like when you close on a company?
Well, we're doing a lot more of the internet deals now. Sometimes it can look like that. Other times it could be just like no closing at all. I mean, especially with the internet deals, you can get into deals where literally there is no paperwork. It's everything is online. You're not necessarily signing contracts on the smaller deals because of the way you can transfer it. I mean, one, you can verify everything. You're logging into the accounts and all of that. You can make that transfer and be able to have everything and then send the person the money once they are once you have control of the site and that kind of thing. So yeah, as we get further and further along, there's less. And then the other side of that is, we literally just closed the deal where, the seller's in New Jersey, the buyer's in California. And so, people aren't even in the same state and that kind of thing to sit down on a closing when they're buying those deals.
Yeah, I
So,
guess especially if it's like a virtual business.
yeah.
So is there one deal that stands out? It sounds like you've bought a lot of businesses over the last couple of years. Is there one deal in your mind maybe that stands out as your best deal ever?
Yeah, and it'd have to be my very first deal just because looking back on it, I was so
Yeah,
clueless
right.
and just like bumping my way through the dark. And so I look back at my younger self and to put that deal together and make it work and pay off that credit card debt and
Right,
keep my
right.
parents happy. All of that, that definitely. And then of course, just the fact that it set me down this path. But all of that makes that my best deal ever.
So you bought the stock simulator for 70,000, 50% was owner financed, and then at the height, what was it worth? What sort of offers were you getting on it?
1.4 was the high.
Wow. And so you're probably in your 20s when you're getting this sort of
Oh,
offers. So yeah, holy cow. And but then I guess the stock market crashed, and then you still ended up selling it for more than what you paid for it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and that money actually at that point we had taken on investors, so that money went back to investors, and I went and basically said, okay, I'm not doing anything on the internet ever again, and did a couple offline deals, and it was a few years before I was able to bring myself back to doing internet deals, but it still turned out. I mean, I think because of the experience, man, that was absolutely
Right.
my best deal ever.
Yeah, it really laid the foundation, probably gave you the confidence that, hey, man, I can buy a business and turn it into something that's worth a lot more. So I know a lot of people are listening to this and they're super interested. Even guys like me, I've browsed the business section in Craigslist and just spent hours just looking at all the different businesses that are for sale. I'm sure there's a lot of people in our audience that are doing the same thing. How can people reach out to you if they're interested in getting into this space?
People can feel free to shoot me an email directly, just ace@acechapman.com. You
Okay.
can check out the website acechapman.com, and then I'm on Twitter @acechapman. But I would encourage people to check out the book, The ACE Formula,
Okay.
and learn a little bit about just the foundation of going out, buying these businesses, what to look for, what to stay away from, and how to think like a deal maker.
Right. I'm sure it's especially somebody that's already interested in buying and selling real estate. It's probably just a tweak of mindset because it's the same principles. It's finding motivated sellers. It's understanding ROI and just shifting those principles into whatever business they're looking at.
Yeah, it is. The great thing about investors and real estate investors are better than entrepreneurs when we're taking them through the process, because entrepreneurs always looking at the deal, thinking like, okay, this is I can start a business on top of this, and it always turns into this entrepreneurial thing, and they're looking at the broken business, trying to figure out how to fix it, as opposed to the great business and how can I just make this a little better. And for it's a lot more the self-employed mentality if you take it back to the rich dad poor dad quadrants. And so the first thing we got to do with those folks is get them to pass the self-employed to the business owner to the actual investor. And the leg up that real estate investors have is already coming to the table thinking like an investor.
Interesting. That's a great point. Folks, again, his website is acechapman.com. You can email him directly, ace@acechapman.com. Also, if you would check out the book, I'm assuming the book's on Amazon.
Amazon, yep.
Yep, The Ace Formula. Start there and then feel free to reach out to him. I know, Ace, that I'm definitely going to be in touch with you even after we're done with this, because I've got some ideas and I've had things presented to me even just here recently that I think might be worth
Yeah.
working on. So, man, Ace, thanks so much for being on the show. This was fantastic. Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini with a special offer. If you go to our website right now, dealfarm.net, you have the ability to download our new blueprint. It's called 30 Days to 10K. It's basically the exact blueprint you need to start profiting from wholesaling real estate right now. It's the resources, it's the websites, it's the services that we use. I've even included my exact postcard that I send out. Basically, everything you need to start getting deals in the next 30 days. Again, it's at our website, dealfarm.net. Check it out. You can download it for free. Also, we still have our free t-shirt offer. If you want a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt, just subscribe through iTunes to our podcast and give us a 5-star rating, and then go through our website, contact us, give us your name, address, and t-shirt size, and we will send you a t-shirt in the mail immediately. As always, thanks so much for listening to the Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.